Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde After Dark, a bonus series where we discuss the wilder side of Oscar nominees and winners. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Workrout.
And today, there's something very important that we need to do as soon as possible. We need to talk about Eyes Wide Shut, which turns 25 this year. One of my favorite Stanley Kubrick films, I will just come right out and say it. We need to cover more of his films, I think, on the pod, but I'm so excited to talk about this one today. All of the lore around Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, this being the longest shoot ever, and why this is a very important Christmas movie, too.
This movie is surrounded by mystery, so we can talk about that a little bit. There's a lot with Kubrick himself having passed away like very soon after shooting in the final cut. So there are a lot of theories, you know, like, did he really have full control over the final cut? Is this really what he wanted us to see? There's so much. And I think every viewing is different because of that. And you're trying to find symbols or meaning in different aspects, the acting, the ideas, the theories of the mask. And, you know, you could go on and on and on forever, and we'll try not to do that. It's also, what was it, like NC-17, and they had to edit it back. They put in these like computer animated clothed people to mask what you see in certain scenes. So there's just a lot happening in this movie. And obviously I love Kubrick. I totally agree with that. I feel like what we've covered, Dr. Strangelove in some way, shape or form, Barry Lyndon, The Shining on After Dark. We did that one for sure. Not really 2001.
Yeah, we haven't. Those, I was thinking back and I realized those are the three. But even like Barry Lyndon and Dr. Strangelove, we covered those as part of Oscar Rewinds.
Mm-hmm.
So covering the year. So it wasn't
fairly
like
quick.
A full Kubrick deep dive. But I mean, maybe in a few years with its anniversary, we can do 2001, A Space Odyssey, which is famously Kubrick's only Oscar win is for that movie, which I think a lot of people consider his best. And I totally understand that comment and that sentiment for sure. I think it's a masterpiece. I just tend to, I think, prefer the ones that we've talked about, actually.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy that this was his only number one movie at the box office. I'm surprised how well it did. It made $162 million off of a $65 million budget. But this being his only number one, I mean, it makes sense in ways. Would you say that this is his most accessible film?
No. I would say probably The Shining is his most accessible, just because it's a horror film and it has so many fans. I think not just people like us who cover movies obsessively and who've watched, you know, thousands of films. People who just like horror movies in general love The Shining and can see its merits. And I think there are a lot of easy ways into it, even though it does leave you with a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. But this is just a strange, strange movie. And that's why I love it so much. When I think about the best movies ever made, Eyes Wide Shut doesn't immediately jump to the top of the list, even though it's made by a master. But when I think of my favorite movies, I'll just come right out and say Eyes Wide Shut is my favorite movie of 1999, which is a loaded movie year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just because over the years, I have just found more and more to love about it. I have more questions than I ever have before. And I just get so swept up in this dreamlike world that Kubrick has created. And you know I love a movie with a completely ambiguous ending. And that leaves you guessing. And I think with the whole thing with Kubrick and the final cut, I do believe that what we're seeing is for the most part what Kubrick wanted us to see. And that's because, what, 2 weeks before he passed away, he screened the film to a few executives and to Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. And he was one of those directors who did have final cut. If the studio had a problem with it, it didn't really matter. He had final cut. I think the changes, though, and where it could get a little dicey and why people have these questions is what you were talking about with the change from the NC-17 rating to the R rating and having to cut 65 seconds of the film. So I do think there are some changes, but for the most part, I think we're seeing what Kubrick wants us to see. I think he wants us to question everything in front of us. I think he wants to create this brilliant and beautiful, dreamlike New York, and really to dissect these two star personas, in particular Tom Cruise. And you talking about this being his one number one film completely makes sense because of who we have attached to it. It would have been like if when we were growing up, a movie about a sex cult starring Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie came out. Like, you have to think about their place and their marriage, where it was in the public eye at the time. And it was also a time when if you put Tom Cruise's name above the line on a poster, it was making money. So, yeah, in that way, I think it makes sense. I think people were just curious to see what it was in a sick, twisted way. But really, this movie isn't that graphic. That's the interesting part. Sure, there's a lot of nudity and, you know, the Eyes Wide Shut party, that whole thing that has definitely, I think, been a talking point since the movie came out, is there. But when you actually break it down, one of the most interesting parts of the movie is we never see a sex scene with Tom Cruise's character. It's all him observing and not really being able to make that happen for himself.
Or just dreaming, imagining what his wife is doing with a naval officer. So I think it is really interesting, and I don't want to get there just yet. Let's do our normal intro. But also, that Brangelina movie for me, it was Mr. and Mrs. Smith. There wasn't an outward sex cult, but in a way, kind of was. That's a funny comparison there. I love that movie as a teen. I shouldn't say kid, but yeah, let's do our normal intro here, because from the title itself and the image we have right before that, there's so much importance placed on that and exactly what Kubrick wants us to see or not see in this movie. And that, I think, is just so brilliant. So, description here: after Dr. Bill Harford's wife, Alice, admits to having sexual fantasies about a man she met, Bill becomes obsessed with having a sexual encounter. He discovers an underground sexual group and attends one of their meetings and quickly discovers that he is in over his head. Like we've said, this is directed by Stanley Kubrick. It stars Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Cindy Pollack, Vanessa Shaw, Todd Field, and more. Some awards for the film, so it didn't have any Oscar nominations, but there were some other bodies that awarded or nominated it, including the Golden Globes. This was nominated for original score. It also won a special award at the Venice Film Festival called the Film Critica Bastone Bianco Award. It was nominated at the Costume Designers Guild for Contemporary Film. Like you mentioned earlier, it actually has a Guinness World Record for longest constant movie shoot of 400 days. It was nominated at the César Awards for Foreign Film, so that's France. And then it had three nominations at the Satellite Awards for Actress for Kidman, Cinematography, and Sound. And this one I want to talk about, which I've never heard of before, but it won Most Intrusive Musical Score at the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards.
I saw this in the outline that you put it in, and I have a major bone to pick because I love how the music is used. Is it intrusive? Maybe. But it's very important in the way that classical music comes in, the way the piano is used. And fun fact that I had to share with our friend Kevin Jacobson, our composer on this movie, Jocelyn Pook, guess what else she scored? The Glenn Close classic, The Wife.
Oh, gosh. Well, there you go.
But yeah, I mean, if we're thinking of intrusive scores, look to Volker Bertelmann's Conclave score this year, or his score for All Quiet on the Western Front. But yeah, I've never heard of the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards.
Yeah, neither have I. It's maybe a B-list Razzie Awards, but I think we do need a letterbox list of movies with like single note piano scores like that. I mean, obviously, there's some really good ones with, like, Jaws up there, but those definitely are in there as well.
So we do have a number of Oscar connections, obviously, for Eyes Wide Shut. Stanley Kubrick, like we mentioned at the top of the episode, won an Oscar for special visual effects for 2001: A Space Odyssey. and he was nominated for 12 others across a number of categories over the years. Tom Cruise has 4 Oscar nominations, 2 in lead actor, 1 in supporting, and most recently, 1 for Best Picture for Top Gun Maverick. Nicole Kidman has 1 Oscar win for The Hours and 4 other nominations. Fingers crossed, that's soon to be 5 with Baby Girl. Todd Field has 6 Oscar nominations, 2 for picture, 1 for director, 3 for screenplay. Our Nick Nightingale here, of course, went on to direct one of our favorite movies, Tar. Sydney Pollack has 2 Oscar wins, picture and director for Out of Africa, and 5 other nominations. Frederick Raphael won 1 Oscar for screenplay for Darling and was nominated for 1 other. Leslie Tompkins, our production designer, was nominated for an Oscar for Yentl. Roy Walker, another production designer here, won an Oscar for Barry Lyndon and was nominated for 2 others. And Merritt Allen, our costume designer, was nominated for an Oscar for La Vie en Rose. So we started to talk about it at the beginning, I think partially because I got too excited because I love this movie so much. But let's get into our review. What do you think of Eyes Wide Shut and what is your relationship to it? Do you remember when you first saw it? Was it part of a Kubrick deep dive or anything like that?
It had to have been because I can't remember, and I don't know if it was necessarily Christmas time related. I've seen it a couple of times, probably not more than 3 at this point, but I did watch it at some point during the last few years at Christmas time. I don't know. I wouldn't call it rocky, but I would call it temperamental. My relationship with this movie, I've scored it really high before, and I think this watch, I was a little bit more skeptical. I also read into a lot more of it this time to be able to talk about it as well. So I like what Kubrick is doing. I think it's more of an appreciation than a love. I think that's where I sit right now. But there are aspects that I really love. I think this time I felt it a little bit on the longer side, but that's also deliberate. So we can get into this world, their psyches. Is it a dream? Is it reality? Kind of mind space. So I think that's where I'm stuck right now. But I do think it's a beautiful technical achievement. I'm sure at some point you'll bring up like the Barry Lyndon lighting effect and how he uses real lighting in the scene to capture what we're seeing. And I love that juxtaposition of the warm lighting inside and that blue outside that we get. And then at one point that does flip and we are blue inside, which I think is important and fun to see. So that's kind of where I sit. I'm not negative on it at all, but I think there are, you know, bigger meta aspects like with Tom and Nicole that really give this movie another life, I would say. I'm kind of scared to ask this, but when did you first see it? What's your relationship with it?
So I didn't actually see it too young. I think like that's a fair question to have considering some of the movies I did watch when I was younger. But my early relationship to it is I remember actually absorbing the Tom and Nicole of it all because we would always watch Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and get magazines like Entertainment Weekly, and I just like early, I remember people talking about this movie, and I remember thinking it had a really cool title as a child, like Eyes Wide Shut. There's something about that that my brain couldn't comprehend. And then I remember too the poster with the purple background and then Nicole looking at the camera with one eye, I thought was so cool. So it was one of those movies where honestly, in a way like American Beauty, where the poster really just stuck with me as a kid. And I thought, okay, I'll watch that one day solely because of the poster and just absorbing things about it. But I don't think I watched this actually until college. So it was much later when I was getting more into Kubrick and diving into my film education a little bit more. And I was really excited to watch it, I remember, because it had just been built up over the years, but I just hadn't gotten to it. And it just was one of those that clicked for me. And when I say clicked for me, it's important to note that it doesn't mean I understood it all. I still don't get it. And that's what I like about the movie. I don't think there is a way to fully understand it. I think that you can just take what you see and interpret it. And like any great piece of art, I think it's enriched every single viewing after the first one just gets better. And there's more to pull apart. And as you get older and have more experiences in life, you can bring new things to the movie. And I love art like that. That's just my favorite type of art. And I love engaging with art like that. And I think when you put the layer on top of it of the biggest married couple in the world at the time, and you think of what Kubrick put them through, not so much in terms of like the stories we hear about directors like David O. Russell or anything like that, not like that, but just saying, I'm going to take the biggest movie star in the world, or one of them, Tom Cruise, and just basically say you can't shoot anything else for over a year, for 400 days. And in that process of working with me, I'm going to completely alter the trajectory of your career and humiliate you. But yeah, there's something I think about casting a famous couple and having them interrogate their deepest fears, desires, insecurities on screen in a film is... that just doesn't happen. I wonder what kind of films Tom Cruise would make now if he didn't make this movie, because I think this prohibited him then from really looking inward again in roles. Because after this, it's like, I mean, he has an interesting period. We can talk about Tom Cruise, but it's hard to imagine he'll ever take a role like this ever again. And this year he has two, it's important, but he has this and Magnolia. And both roles only get more and more fascinating when you consider Tom Cruise's public persona at the time as he's getting deeper and deeper into Scientology.
Well, apparently PTA came to this set to offer him that role, which is also crazy.
Yeah.
And that maybe PTA saw something with him acting potentially that said, oh, you're right for my movie too. So maybe there's some meta aspect there of these characters aligning in a certain way. Tom Cruise is fascinating. I mean, also, was this the beginning of the end for that relationship because they divorced 2 years after this? That's a question. But Nicole has said that she loved the shoot despite going way over. She's like, I would have done it another year if I could. I mean, that's just what Kubrick was. And it's interesting for her to say that, maybe because she's in like the first, I don't know, half or hour of the film, and then she's like gone for most of it. She's asleep. She's just at home with the kids. You know, we don't see her because we're with Tom's character for so long. I mean, it goes from him talking to Nick at the bar, and then he gets the suit and all of that, and then he goes to the party, the orgy. And then eventually we come back to Alice. But I think the other interesting part to all of this is that Kubrick kept them separate. They wouldn't let them talk to each other about what was happening on set. So when Nicole filmed the sex scenes with that naval officer for 6 days, he said, you can't tell Tom any of this. Don't tell him what's happening. And that just, and I can just imagine Tom Cruise like going nuts in the next room. And then when you see him frustrated and they edit in those sequences, I mean, I feel like that's real. It's obviously movie magic, but like that feels like a Tom Cruise fight waiting to happen. So I think what Kubrick enabled of his actors, there's just so much truth in that. And you see that on screen.
Yeah. I mean, there are stories too, thinking of the shooting, of like how the opening scene of Nicole is just her naked. Kubrick just shot that himself with him and Tom and Nicole, like just the three of them. So it's just, you think of that too. It's just, it's odd all around of what this shoot must have been like. Imagine Kubrick with an intimacy coordinator. I feel like he would have fired them the first day. But you think about some of the lines that this couple, Bill and Alice, say to each other. These are some pretty brutal fights. And they're the types of fights you just never really want to have. That just kind of boil and boil and boil and then go over. And then you think, okay, this is an actual married couple having this fight. What do you think of their acting? Because there are a few line readings that I think are pretty rough. And that really just come because Kubrick makes them do 75, 80 takes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. But I think they're supposed to have this like mechanical aspect to that dialogue because it is all meant to make you as the viewer question, is this really happening? At least to me, that's how I see it. And I think because of their line readings, at times this movie feels like a comedy. Mm-hmm. While it's kind of masked as an erotic thriller that's not really that, that's more noir, that's a drama. So it's always constantly like, okay, what are we trying to do here? Which also makes you think about that as well. I think Nicole has some of the best and funniest line readings in the movie. And maybe that's part of why I was disconnected more from it this time, is like just trying to understand like some of the conversations between the Tom Cruise and Sidney Pollack character at his house. I think the fight in the bed, though, is really good. I love where that leads because that's when you get into her head and it's not like, oh, men have everything and women are just there. I think that's the flip that also Bill can't stop thinking about. It's that moment. So I think that's kind of our centerpiece in this movie. And from there, it's Bill's adventure.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on the acting because some of those line readings are, especially like you said with Nicole, so over the top. And we'll get to some in a little bit when we talk about the quotes. But she almost has this kind of sing-songy delivery to them. And again, I think that comes from doing multiple takes. But Kubrick, again, in part of his genius, it really is them not knowing which take he's going to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And he could take a bad one because he feels, you know, it's more authentic to how they might fight, or if it feels a little bit more mechanical, or if it leans into maybe what he's thinking with the tone of his movie, he'll take that one, as opposed to a take maybe that Tom Cruise thought he was doing perfectly. So I like that it always just feels a little bit off. That's something that I really respond to in most of Kubrick's movies, honestly. I think the same thing with Barry Lyndon, like you said, with the humor. That movie is so funny. And if you can get on its wavelength with its sense of humor, it's going to be a much more enjoyable viewing experience. And here, like when we think about just the opening party in general,
mm-hmm.
it's just a very strange experience before we even get to what you think of with Eyes Wide Shut, which is that big party scene with the orgy. Alice dancing with the Hungarian, who smashed, by the way. Whatever was happening with her in that scene, I understood. And then the whole thing, too, with Bill and Ziegler. It's like, why is the bathroom designed like that? Why is there an office in here? But everything, because it's Kubrick, you know it's purposeful. And just to create this sense of unease and just a little bit of skepticism. Is this real? Is everything all right here? And that's before we even get into what feels more like a dream.
Yeah, it's all of the questions that make you feel off-center watching this and how Kubrick adds these themes of like marriage. Like Bill goes off and we watch him with Ziegler have to help this girl who's unconscious. But Alice, meanwhile, I mean, she's with the Hungarian, but she's like, where did you go off to? You went with those two women. And so it's this constant battle of, can you trust your partner when we know? But it's like, yeah, should we be trusting Bill? I don't know. So it's embedding these doubts in your head while you're watching this movie too. Again, putting them on real life because of who we know Tom and Nicole to be. And to me, that all comes back to our opening shot and cut. And that is, like you said, it's Nicole stripping from this gown and we see her backside and she's naked. And then it cuts to the title, Eyes Wide Shut. And it's like, are you going to be watching the movie I want you to see? Because this is all you're saying of Nicole good luck watching this movie, wanting to see, because of its NC-17 rating, something of these actors that you know them to be. That's not going to happen. Maybe of what you know this orgy sequence to be, it's not what you're thinking it is. And like this idea that Eyes Wide Shut, like this impossibility, and it's from the lens of Alice that we're seeing things, or that he wants us to see things from this shot as well. So there's a lot, even just like in the first 5 seconds, that this movie comes back to, and I think is just so brilliant.
And this theme, right, what you're talking about too, it really stretches across Kubrick's filmography. Like if we think about different shots from his earlier films or visions that characters have, like if you think about The Shining or even in 2001, like this idea of the eyes and what they can see and perceive and allowing someone to access something that they wouldn't normally be able to. I think that's really interesting. And then I always think also about just dreaming and literal sleep, right? Like if Bill, as he's dreaming, like he has his eyes shut to so much around him in regular life, but as he's dreaming, they're suddenly, I think, metaphorically open to the world around him as he's experiencing it, but shut at the same time because it's just a dream. And that's where you start having these interesting conversations and thinking about metaphorical vision and literal vision. And that's something that only Kubrick, I think, can do.
Well, that was a preview of our episode on Eyes Wide Shut. If you like that and you'd like to hear more, including a much deeper After Dark dive on the film, possibly NC-17 related, feel free to subscribe on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWild at the After Dark tier or higher. And you'll also have access to other episodes we've done in the past in this series. So thank you for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. And check out our website at oscarwilde.squarespace.com for updated nomination predictions.
And speaking of those Oscar nomination predictions, next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll be having an award season check-in. It'll be a pretty big episode where we will talk about the Gotham winners, the LA Film Critics Association, and New York Film Critics Circle winners, and our Golden Globe nominees. So we are full speed ahead into award season, and I think that'll be a very fun conversation. We'll see if some of our favorites get nominated. But thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.